Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to a very special edition of the Peristyle Podcast. We're going to be live right now, Friday Harbor, Tiny Radio. We got Dan Weber on the show, and we are broadcasting this podcast live, experimenting with a little bit, trying it out, see what you do. We want to be able to have live interaction. If you want to tweet any questions to us during the show, you can tweet me at Inside Troy. We want to talk about, of course, USC football. And we have USCFootball.com beat writer Dan Weber joining the show. Hey, Dan, thanks for being patient with us. How you doing, man?
Good. Sounds like the sound of the Trojan marching band. I guess they went from the Coachella to your studio.
Yeah, they're playing out there in the Inland Empire out here in Southern California, Coachella. But, we record the show. Normally, we have Dan on every week, and we wanted to try a live element. So we talked with the guys over at Friday Harbor Tiny Radio. So it's the website is fhtinyradio.com, and we're allowing people to listen to us live, see what we have to say, and we want to make it interactive so we can – we have some questions that people wrote in, Dan, that we'll get to, but we also wanted to allow people, if they wanted to write in, tweet me, say hello, and come on the show. We could interact with them live. So it's something we haven't done before. I thought it'd be a fun thing to try.
Yeah. Now, where do they listen to it live? How do they access it live?
Yeah. So the website is fhtinyradio.com, and with the USC show, they're doing it at 6 p.m. Pacific time. They're actually going to have, if you're a University of Washington fan, they're going to have a Husky fan podcast that will be live at 7 p.m. So we're on the 6 p.m. time slot right now. It's fhtinyradio.com.
Hey, sounds good. Okay.
And cool. Yeah, so if you have any questions, feel free to tweet me at Inside Troy. So we'll kind of answer the stuff as we go. It's I thought what we'd start with, Dan, is the eve of the NFL draft, and I'm not sure how many USC players are going to get drafted, but I want to kind of get your thoughts on that. The highest ranked one, of course, is Sua Cravens, the outside linebacker / safety / we're not sure what he's going to play in the NFL. But what are your thoughts here on the eve of the NFL draft?
Yeah, I don't know that I can remember an eve of the NFL draft with less anticipation from USC's standpoint. And that's probably a good thing in a way. Was on the conference call with the all 12 Pac-12 coaches, and many of them were asked about the NFL draft because of this guy or Jared Goff or Scooby Wright or UCLA with 6 3-year guys leaving the program. And Clay Helton got no questions at all about the NFL draft, which is probably a really good thing going forward. That, it may not be the greatest thing this year for USC's tradition of, having the most first-round draft picks and the most overall draft picks and all that kind of thing. But he didn't have to answer any questions. And I think one of the reasons is, it's really been hard to, Sua Cravens is your number one guy, and he's a guy without a position. There are people who, I really respect and with the NFL types, and they can't believe that he's sort of this in-between weight now, that he's like 225 and he didn't do all that well in, the combine numbers and things like that. And a lot of people do not see him as a linebacker. However, when you talk to Sua, half the people in the NFL that he talked to did. And so here he's probably not big enough to play linebacker right now. Probably not, at 225 pounds, he may not be quick enough. He didn't have a real great, vertical jump and that kind of thing to play safety. Even though, everybody who's watched him thinks, he's a great you know, in terms of ball skills and closing gaps and, you know, tackling in the open field and all that kind of stuff. I know that people I respect the most say they think he probably should have lost some weight and just declared, I'm a safety. But I guess that's hard when half the people you're talking to in interviews at the NFL are thinking you might be a linebacker. Do you just say, no, I'm not that guy? I know, you know, 2 years ago when he was shifted to, you know, linebacker, he was really not happy. He wanted to be a safety. I think deep down he still wants to be a safety. But I think that's part of the problem. I mean, nobody knows what to think. Even, you know, USC fans who love Sua don't know what to think. I mean, he wasn't probably put in a position to make a lot of plays the last couple of years. He, you know, if you were the other team, you could probably figure out how to, you know, avoid Sua. So I think that takes away a lot of the, you know, a lot of the excitement. Then, you know, Max Turk has got the broken, or got the knee injury, and he can't really, you know, finish out the year. So we don't have a sense of where he might go. And he went into the year as the number one center in the country. And Kevon Seymour, I guess everybody's hopeful just because he had such a great combine, ran so well. But, you know, here's a kid that didn't start most of the game. So there's not a lot probably for the USC fans to really get involved with. It's just kind of like, well, we'll watch and see what happens. But who knows how this is going to go.
Yeah,
I mean, don't blame him.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the NFL draft ends up being there's potential and there's production. I think Sua Cravens does bring a lot of production to the table. It's just one of those tweener things, and that can you can certainly get dinged. With Max Turek, you know, getting the injury, you know, got to see there's, you know, a couple good years of film on him. But, you know, I think the injury certainly is potential to set him back. And, you know, we've heard maybe Sua slipping. We're not really sure where he's going to go. It'll be interesting to see where he does end up going. But Kevon Seymour, you mentioned, and he's someone I think helped himself a lot following the season. You know, sometimes you look at, well, what he was able to do during the season and things like that. This is more of a situation where he showed how fast he could be, you know, when he ran the football. He did really well in the drills and I think in the interviews and everything. Someone where, you know, maybe he wasn't a super standout as far as a corner at USC, but after the season, he's one of those guys that might have helped himself the most.
I think a lot. He's got the frame. He's, you know, I think that 4.41 40, whatever, you know, that was like, whoa, wait, you know, amazing. He didn't get to do a lot of, you know, shutdown stuff and probably wasn't coached all that well in doing it. If I'm drafting a kid like that, I might think, you know, we got a lot to teach him, but he could be very teachable. And, you know, maybe some of the lack of production, well, he obviously was injured a number of times, but you know, wasn't necessarily his fault the way, you know, the defense was constructed the last couple of years. Although I did see, talk about production, I did see a tweet, Michael Lev tweeted from an unidentified NFL scout about Sua, and he looked at Sua's numbers over the last, well, all three, his total career numbers, and said that for a player like Sua, he didn't have enough production. He didn't have enough tackles for losses, didn't have enough interceptions, you know, that kind of thing. And the numbers weren't, you know, weren't great. I mean, again, we all have seen him since high school and know his closing ability and his instincts and his, you know, his sense of where the football is. But the way, you know, the USC defense played, it was hard to show that, you know, for a kid like Sua. And you feel bad for him. You wished he could have come back and played, you know, strong safety for a year, gotten himself down to, you know, 210 pounds and really, you know, showed what he could do. But right now you're kind of guessing. And then he didn't do, you know, didn't do any private individual workouts. So teams are, it's going to be really interesting. I can't even guess what's going to happen with Sua. Hope he goes to the right team.
Yeah, I think it's going to be about which, you know, whoever picks him, whatever GM decides to pick him, they're going to feel it's a good fit. And it's funny, I would argue, I love the anonymous scout comments, by the way.
Yeah.
We get so many of those.
There's a million of them. There's
But as far as production goes, if you look at the USC defense as a whole, was there a lot of people making individual plays? There really wasn't. He was one guy that was.
Taken out of the that was just not even part of the scheme much. For some reason, Cameron Smith broke through last year.
He did.
I'm not even sure how that happened. It was like he wasn't in the script, but nobody else, you know, got to make a lot of individual plays. I mean, even Leonard Williams, a year ago in his senior year, didn't get a chance to probably have the kind of statistical, you know, numbers that you would have expected because of the way they played. So you're right about, you know, Sua didn't get a chance to put up those kind of numbers.
Yeah, if he was in, like, I think this year, we've talked about this before, with Clancy Pendergast coming back, I think he's going to be, it's going to be a much more aggressive style. I think you're going to see more individual plays being made. Now, sure, there could be some mistakes and stuff, but it's just the nature of the USC defense did not, it just didn't lend itself to producing guys that were going to have, you know, 125 tackles and 15 tackles for life. It just wasn't going to be that kind of a defense. So I think if you just look at that, well, I'm going to compare Sua Cravens to some of the other guys across the country. It's just, I think a lot of it had to do with defensive scheme and not really his ability.
Absolutely. There's no question about it. Yeah, and I kind of maybe, knowing that Michael absolutely knew that, I mean, he was just saying, here's what somebody in the NFL is saying. So to let you, he didn't, you know, say whether he agreed with it or not. I think he would, if we pushed him, he would agree with what you just said. That this wasn't a defense that was going to ever give anybody, you know, those kinds of numbers. It just wasn't anything about that defense that would allow somebody to do it. And it was, in some ways, you could target Sua and, you know, take him out. I mean, you didn't have to worry about, you know, other people making plays. So I think he was clearly targeted, and that made it, you know, even more difficult for him.
Yeah. So we talked about Max Turek, Kevon Seymour, but you're right. As far as USC was tweeting out the, I think it was 79 first round draft picks, like more than any other school. Clay Helton and stuff were tweeting it out. It just, you know, it's not going to be a really strong draft. It's funny, interesting in Los Angeles. Like, you know, we talk about USC and UCLA. What they're going to do in the draft. The Rams have the first pick, and then they have a whole day off. They don't have anything until Saturday.
Right.
Like the 12th pick on Saturday. So there could be some really, I guess, some lulls in the draft as far as from a Los Angeles perspective, from the USC, UCLA side and the Rams too.
Yeah, that's kind of ironic when the first year for the Rams and USC's got nobody for the Rams, UCLA, you know, you got to think that's probably not going to happen. I mean, there is some drama there with Miles Jack
and
me. And nobody knowing what's the real story there. So you've got some, you know, drama in terms of questions that aren't answered. But, you know, as far as, you know, who's going to take this guy or that guy or who's going to get traded up so they can go here and what have you. USC people and UCLA, even with the six guys that left early, are going to kind of be on the sidelines just watching to see when and if, you know, something good happens for some of those guys.
Yeah, the Rams one would have been interesting if they didn't trade. But, you know, getting the first pick, of course. But, you know, Jared Goff, who we've seen a lot of, like, you know, that looks like that's where it's going to go. There's not a whole lot of drama there. And then, like you said, it's like the first pick on Thursday. No picks the rest of Thursday. No picks on Friday. And then you got to wait 12 picks on Saturday. So there's not, before they had a first and 2 seconds, and there would have been like, oh, maybe get like a Paxton Lynch at 15 and then take a wide receiver with one of their second round picks. So it just kind of takes a little bit of the drama out, but it does add some excitement. And, you know, keeping a Pac-12 quarterback on the West Coast, I think that should be fun too.
Yeah. And it's interesting though, if you're a USC fan, you don't, you know, you like the idea of Jared Goff, but you don't have any sense of, ooh, that guy really hurt us, or that guy, you know, there's none of that. You know, everybody, you know, he was fun to watch. He had all the, you know, the skill set and what have you, but just the way those games, you know, come down, you never had that sense of, you know, this is a guy to really be feared. I mean, when you played Cal, you didn't think, uh-oh, this is the number one guy in the, you know, the entire country and the entire draft. It just never was that sense of, you know, this is somebody who's really, really, really special. And I don't disagree. He is a pretty special player, but you never had that feeling when USC and Cal got together.
He's never beat USC, like Aaron Rodgers. I mean, I think, hasn't Cal lost to USC like 11 times in a row or something crazy? Like all the good quarterbacks they've had, and no one's ever beat USC.
Although Aaron Rodgers, even though he didn't beat USC, that day where, what did he complete? 23 straight or whatever.
I think it was 23 or 24 straight passes, yeah.
I think USC fans will always remember that game. You know, they survived. But that's as good as you could do that day.
Yeah, certainly. That was, I remember that game. Man, that was a fun one to watch. He was just, sometimes guys are in the zone. He was in the zone. All right, well, we'll get to some questions here, Dan. And wanted to, oh, you know what? Before we do that, one quick thing. There was a you mentioned the Pac-12 conference call with some of the coaches that were on. Anything interesting from Clay Helton on that conference call?
Well, I thought Clay, I think he might have been the most upbeat of all 12 coaches. I mean, he came across as, and the more you think about it, I mean, this is a year where there are significant questions all across the Pac-12. I mean, there are coaches, a number of them, that still have three quarterbacks competing and aren't, you know, close to making a decision. There are coaches, I mean, big-time guys like David Shaw and I guess Todd Graham said they may be playing two quarterbacks by the, you know, when the season starts, which is pretty amazing. I mean, I know USC people get all excited because there wasn't a decision about the quarterbacks by the end of the spring, but USC's in far better shape. And you would hear coaches, you know, talk about Utah, for example. All their linebackers are gone. I mean, they got to, and this is, you know, a team that's built around defense, and they've got to just totally rebuild the linebackers. Or Colorado, for example, they lost, you know, this is a year they've got 43, I guess, juniors and seniors on scholarship. And they've been, you know, just trying to get going and trying, and their quarterback breaks his foot. And so now they sign the Texas Tech graduate transfer, Davis Webb. Unfortunately for them, that's not the same as a scholarship. It's a grant and aid. And so even though he's committed and signed with Colorado, everybody else still can recruit him. So California is recruiting the heck out of him, even though he's supposed to go to Colorado, and they need a guy to replace, obviously, Goff. So, I mean, there are teams with lots of issues. I mean, Stanford, you know, has to find a quarterback, has to completely rebuild their offensive line. Arizona State does. They've got to find – they've got three quarterbacks, and it's – as you went through it, you think Clay looks like he has fewer questions and more answers. And there's just there was a sense of, wow, this is interesting. Stanford, for example, David Shaw is talking about they hope the tradition that they've built in recent years is enough to kind of carry them through till they get squared away. And I think Todd Graham was saying the same thing. Oregon, kind of the same thing. And I didn't get quite that same thing from Clay. I think Clay felt like, you know, this team, we kind of know where this team's going and who we're going with. And it was interesting just to listen to all the coaches. You don't hear the same sense from the Pac-12 that there's anybody who's like a national challenger right now. You know, you don't have the sense that, you know, Oregon's trying to figure out, or Stanford, how to get into the college football playoffs. That may be a little bit, you know, past where they think these teams are this year. So it was just kind of an interesting, you know, everybody's take was different. Everybody had to answer different questions. Jim Mora at UCLA had to answer a lot of questions about guys going to the NFL. And so he ends up, you know, very much talking about, well, we must be doing some things right. We're recruiting some good players that they can all leave after 3 years, and our coaching must be pretty good. So that's exciting. And I always think, gosh, if you got to be talking about the guys who are going to the NFL, it's probably not where you want to be as a program in some ways. If they're not talking about the players you got coming back for next year.
Like we said before at the top of the show, the Husky Fan podcast will follow us on Tiny Radio. Chris Peterson obviously turned things around pretty well up there in Washington. One of those teams that people are talking about, there's Oregon and Stanford, but with that defense and young quarterback and the offense looking better, what did Chris Peterson have to say on the call?
It was amazing. He had the shortest one of all. I think there are only like three questions and didn't go to 10 minutes. He talked about Jake Browning and what it takes to have a freshman quarterback able to play. There were a lot of, through the whole league, a lot of talk about freshman quarterbacks or quarterbacks being ready to play. And he said, it's not the ideal situation. You only do it out of necessity. The depth problems in a college football are going to give you that situation every once in a while. He said, kids are coming out better prepared, better coached, stronger, more mature out of high school. They've got individual coaches and they work at it all year round. So he said, you can do it, but you'd rather not do it. Other than that, he mentioned the fact that, last year they had four draft picks in the top 44, I guess it was. He said, this year, he said, our guys are a little bit under the radar. So nobody really, jumps out at you. And I'm trying to think if there was much else. He was just very in the background, kind of. It just wasn't like there was much that, and that's a little bit maybe Chris Peterson also, but a little bit there just didn't seem to be any topics that were, exciting anybody about Washington football. And maybe that's kind of the way Chris Peterson – wants it to be. Came in last year into the Coliseum, very unexcitedly snuck away with a victory, which USC fans are still trying to figure out how that happened as they look at it and say, how did he possibly lose, to those guys? But I'd say Chris was probably the most understated person in talking about his Husky program.
All right. Oh, I just saw a tweet that came by. So USC, since 1967, USC's had the most first-round draft picks since the common draft began in 67. USC had 68, Miami 58, Ohio State 56, and Florida 46. The Trojans are up there.
And it's pretty amazing when you consider that's held up through the sanctions, that they've been able to, USC's been able to hold on, and USC fans should probably be, pretty proud of that. That somehow they didn't just all go away, and you have a Leonard, Leonard Williams and guys like that that make really big impacts, probably you shouldn't have expected it necessarily, to hold up, but it did.
All right. Well, let's get to some questions, Dan. We had Tarek wrote in. He said, do you see any of the current or incoming wide receivers for USC, besides the J.N.A. Harris, playing defensive back for the Trojans in the fall?
I don't know that they need anybody else. I mean, I think the numbers, when they get everybody there, I mean, I know there are guys that are coming in, both ways, but I think you kind of have a sense of this guy's either an offensive player or a defensive player. But if they get Akili Ross goes to defense, which we think he will, and with a Jenna kind of already moving in that direction, and Jack Jones coming in, and Adoree coming back, and John Plattenberg getting healthy, and Chris Hawkins getting healthy, I just don't see the need to move anybody over there. If you're saying a guy's basically an offensive player, I don't see anybody that you would say, oh, no, let's move him to defense. I don't know. Do you think there's anybody that fits that category?
No, you know, it's funny. I talked to – so we were at the passing down Best of the West tournament in Placentia on Sunday, and Chris Hawkins was there and Michael Hutchins. So Chris Hawkins, the cornerback and or safety, and Michael Hutchins, the linebacker, kind of talking to them about it. And, you know, I was talking to them, and you know, their feeling was that, Harris – Jane Harris kind of wanted to do it. I talked to Harris probably a month or so before that at the Nike camp in Los Angeles, and he was just really trying to get healthy. And I get the – it seems like he just wanted to contribute however he could. I'm just not convinced, though, that he's going to stay there. Like you said, there's a lot of guys coming back. There's more guys coming in. Unless he feels that's the where he could go. And, talking to some of the other players, it seemed like – they felt he did a good job, but it's.
Well, I think he did a good job both sides of the ball. I thought he had a, I think they put in a flanker reverse for him, and he just had a. I think I could see him wherever they need him. I mean, just let him go. I don't have a sense that they're going to absolutely need him. I just think he wanted to play more, and he saw that they needed him, at the end of the spring, and he could be on the field a lot more. And I love that attitude. And but I'm not sure that the numbers are – they're going to have a lot of guys. I mean, a lot more people that can play in the secondary than we've seen in a long time.
The one, Keyshawn Young, Pai Young, him coming in, they were saying receiver, but I could definitely see him playing defensive back. I mean, he did both in high school.
I think of him more as coming in as on defense. I don't know why. I just that's how I look at it. Because you got Vilas Jones coming in on offense. So
right.
I don't know. I think they balance each other out. I don't know. I just think I see Pai as a defensive guy. But it'll be interesting to see how that all works out. The numbers are big on both sides, though. I mean, they've got a lot of receivers. Next year, if they lose five or so of those receivers, that dynamic changes a lot between offense and defense. So it might be good to have a couple of people who can go, both ways, and maybe one year go, defense, and next year go back to offense.
Yeah, and I think people look at it, and we get questions about this too. Why are there so many receivers? There's a lot of receivers on the roster for sure. And I think after last year, Dan, where it was the Juju Smith show and not a lot of other people were getting the football, I think you're going to see it spread out a little bit more now. So people won't mind. I think when you have a whole bunch of receivers on the roster and only one guy's getting the ball, then people are like, why are all these guys playing receiver? But I think you're going to see a lot of other guys get, multiple catches, multiple catch games, double-digit catches, things like that. I think you're going to see that more. So people will, it's good that you have all these receivers.
Yeah, I think you just look at the offense, and it's designed to get the ball quickly to the first guy that's open. And it's designed to have people open. Last year, very often, that first guy wasn't open. And maybe that second guy wasn't open. And now Cody has got two choices. Do I look to see who missed the block and who's going to come and, crush me? Or do I go to my third read? And I don't think you'll see much of that. That was that sort of mechanical 1-2-3. I think if you notice what we've seen is the quarterbacks are dropping back and looking to have a full field of vision, because the idea is, you're not absolutely certain who's not going to be able to be covered. I mean, one of the differences is because there's going to be a tight end in the mix all the time. You don't know who's going to get uncovered or who's going to be open quick. And, I mean, I really like the way this is designed. It's not, where it's got to – it lets Juju, win those battles just because he's Juju. And if people have to, cover a tight end, with a safety or a linebacker or whatever, you're going to have fewer people to cover Juju. So I just think, he'll get his opportunities just because he's Juju, but it won't be because you feel like you have to go in that direction this year. I think it'll be it already is, a totally different sense of where the ball's going to go. I mean, just the idea on the one touchdown in the spring game, you had two tight ends flooding the zone at the flag, you know, 20-some yards downfield. I don't think we've ever seen that before, you know. And the poor defender had to choose one or the other. He couldn't defend both tight ends who were, you know, that deep, that, you know, and, you know, essentially either one of them could have caught, you know, the touchdown pass. I mean, that's just stuff we haven't seen in a long, long time. And that'll, I think that's just going to change the whole, you know, character of the offense.
All right, let's move on. We got a question from Brittany. She's in the USC class of 2012. Thanks for writing in, Brittany. She says, I'm a fan of the podcast and the plethora of information and knowledge that you share about USC football. Thank you for that. Given the recent change of the logo, any word on uniform alterations, specifically if the chrome helmets will become more of a constant and not just for away games? Thanks and fight on from Brittany.
I think the chrome helmets might be a constant on the shelf in the equipment room is what I'm hearing. I think the look is to go back to classic. I mean, and we didn't even respond to it. I was so thrilled about it, I didn't want to talk about it, that they played in the home uniforms with white socks. And that got me, you know, that back to that classic look that I remember first time I ever saw USC play. And so I think the move is to go away from, you know, tricked up this or that. And, you know, I think it's on the – I think those chrome helmets are on the same shelf where they've got the sound system from practice for playing the music. I think they're all in the same room, and they may not be coming out. Maybe the black socks too. Although if it were me – at the first pep rally, what I would like to do is have a big bonfire of the black socks, douse them in gasoline, set them on fire. That would be my trifecta. We could get rid of the chrome helmets, the black socks, and we already got rid of the music. That's what I like. I think USC, you know, the fact that USC's got some things that almost nobody else has. The no names on the back of the jerseys, the fact that, you know, USC and Notre Dame and UCLA, the only, you know, schools that have never played down, you know, in modern football, played a team from a lower classification and all that. I just think some of those things you just keep and you just say, you know, this is us, this is our look. I mean, for example, in the first game next year, Alabama will be wearing the same uniforms that I think they were wearing in 1959 when Bear Bryant went, or whatever year was Bear's first year at Alabama. I like that. That's cool. That'll be two teams, you know, with the uniform looks that are just classic and traditional, and you know exactly who you're looking at when you see them. You don't have to guess.
So the logo changes, they're some subtle changes, I guess you could say, that they, you know, the USC needed to update things and try to make things more consistent. The interlocking SC. Now they're going to keep, like, I think baseball and track kind of have their own, and they're able to keep those. Correct me if I'm wrong on that.
Right. Yes, that's correct. Yep.
But
the track keeps the shield.
Yeah.
Baseball keeps that. Actually, baseball, I think a few years ago, it was the baseball look that got into it. It was in a lawsuit, a copyright lawsuit of some sort with the University of South Carolina on the interlocking SC, and USC, the USC won that one, and the other USC wasn't able to use the interlocking SC. So they've defended it, you know, pretty well. I think the only thing, you know, people are going to notice much is they're going to take the script Trojans off. It's not going to be the combination where you have the interlocking SC and the script Trojans above it, which will take it off the field, I guess. So all you'll have on the center of the field is the SC. The spring game probably was the last time that you'll see that script Trojans on the field.
Yeah, so we got to see that at the spring game, and there was talk, hey, that's going away. And I think one of the coaches, Dan, might have tweeted out, this is the last time you're going to see this because they were getting rid of it or whatever. So, yeah,
I think it was Coach Baxter. He was all over that. Coach Baxter tweeted that out. Yep.
Okay. Let's see. Let's go to our buddy, the G. He says, with Josh Fatu and others coming on board in the fall, after having signed their letter of intent, do they receive the playbook in advance of their arrival? Additionally, do they receive some sort of support slash guidance as it relates to nutrition and a guideline to work with or work out in order to stay in shape? Look forward to your response. Thanks for the podcast and all you guys do. The G.
Yes, yes, and yes, I think. Now, USC lost their nutrition guy. He was rehired by the Eagles. He came from the Eagles for last year and then went back to the Eagles. And I guess all the NFL teams now are making a much bigger push to take care of their guys' nutritional needs and all that. So I understand they have a new hire. Don't know if they're on campus yet, but I think that's a big part of doing individual programs, because they've got the guys that have lost 35 pounds and the guys that have gained 35 pounds, and that's a big deal. Honest to gosh, Chad Wheeler just looks like a different person playing at 310 on his 6'7" frame. I mean, it's just he's able to hold the edge in ways that I think it really really matters. And obviously, Damian Mama and Zach Banner losing more than 30 pounds each, that's going to matter. That matters. So and I think even just little things like Ronald Jones is up to 195 now from 185, and doesn't look like he's lost any speed at all. I think that they definitely do that. In terms of whether they send him the actual whole playbook or they send him enough so that they can really get into summer workouts and they really can understand what they're doing, and they'll definitely have a summer workout kind of playbook that they'll be expected to know. I don't know if they give them the entire thing where they're going to be studying it at home and all that. I would think they give them the summer book, and then they also I think Ivan Lewis is definitely on top of where he expects them to be working out on their own. They'll probably get back into it at the end of May. I don't know if they've set a date absolutely yet for when they officially start summer workouts, but between now and then they'll be expecting them to and they'll be specifically saying, this is what we expect you to do. So yes, they do. That's pretty important that they keep track of all that. Yeah.
And the it's interesting when you talk to the players now. Their playbooks are all on iPads. Everything's electronic. I wonder about the.
Well, I guess I was thinking the managers would have little playbooks.
Yeah.
But they because they could pull out the page or whatever, but you're right, the players, I think it's the iPads that they can hook into their locker lockers. That's a good point.
But you wonder though, with it's so easy. I mean, if you're giving out your playbook to 110 or whatever 18 19 20 year olds on iPads, like how easy would that be just to get out there? I mean, I just don't see it being all that secure.
I wonder if there's anybody. We worry about, hacking into power plants and, all kinds of, industrial espionage. You just wonder if anybody out there would start hacking into, teams' databases to try to come up with their, their game plans. That's an interesting thought. You could probably create a whole industry of, being hired out to teams to try to hack their, their opponents to all this week's game plan.
I mean, it does make it easier, obviously, to have it on an iPad. But man, I mean, it's on Wi-Fi. Like, you could ask a player; they might send it to you. But if you had to do other things, you could probably get it that way too, I would think.
That's one more worry, because we were always thinking how easy it would be to park your car in the fifth or sixth level of the of that one garage overlooking the practice fields and just put a GoPro on your, on your rearview mirror and just let it go for, the rest of the afternoon. But now that new building, at the corner of, what is that, McClintock and can't even think of whatever, that in 38th Street or something like that.
I think 36th,
But that building is, is blocking. It soon will be blocking all the levels of the garage. So USC may not be able to get spied on then, but maybe they got to worry about getting hacked.
True. We had a quick question from Sergio. Who do you think is going to be the starting offensive line for USC in the fall?
That's a really good question. I guess what we don't know is what happens with the center. Shape are Toa and Khalil, and how quickly can they get into it, you know, full go, considering that Nico Fala, I think, hit a really good spring. And I know they really were impressed, Coach Callaway, and they really like what he's done. And so that's a position I think we really don't know enough about in terms of where that's going to go. I mean, if I had to pick him right now, you would think, Vianney at Talavivao at right guard and Chris Brown at the other guard. He seems to be ahead in that four-way battle. I think Jordan Simmons and Damian Mama, it's going to be interesting how that plays out. But it looks like Vianney and Chris may, have had the early jump in spring. But they all, I think they pretty much considered all of them, interchangeable on the first group. And then I would guess if I had to pick, I'd probably say Zach Banner at right tackle and Chad Wheeler at left tackle, and Chuma having the ability, certainly if they would alternate, Chuma goes to right tackle and that gives you Zach who can move over to left. But I'd pick it that way, and I don't think Coach Callaway is ready to go with his five guys, and I don't think I just think that's getting ahead of it right now, because we really don't know what the story exactly is going to be with center.
Yeah, I think with Neil Callaway had the spring to kind of evaluate a lot of guys. I mean, it was like a 10 deep rotation for the first unit, or could be, that 10 guys that can play for sure. But I think that he'll take the offseason to kind of look at film and get a feel for it and really set it up in the fall. So all these guys are going to be competing and try to weed each other out. But I think there's a lot of good options there for USC on the offensive line. It should be, one of the strengths of not just the offense, but the whole team, I would think.
Yeah. And you gotta have two centers. I don't think there's any question. They needed three last year. We always remember that famous game at Washington. They needed three centers on three plays when they lost two of them. I mean, it's just, you better have, enough people who can play center. It looks like they do. Whether you would keep, do you keep Khalil Rogers there if Toa goes in with Nico, or do you move Khalil to guard? Jordan Simmons? You hate to do anything with him now, as a senior, finally getting healthy and getting his chance, and that's his natural position, and he's played well. But do you look at him and say, Jordan, we had you over on defense once, and we probably need you more on defense right now? I mean, I do think those kinds of considerations, may come into play. At least, again, this is where USC's got answers. I mean, the amazing thing is all those guys have played, and, almost all of them have started. And I think the big revelation for me was Nico Fala, followed by Chris Brown, that they just, got some chances last year, and they've taken, they've really grown into their positions. I'm just real impressed with those guys.
We have another question from Tarek. He said, besides Porter Gustin, who do you see as USC's second best pass rusher? I thought it was a good question.
That's a good question.
Would you agree that Porter Gustin is probably the best?
I think he's the biggest. The combination of size and speed and pretty relentless. I don't know that he's anywhere near technique wise yet to where you really want him to be. But you look at him and you think, okay, that's what I want him to look like, and I want him to play hard like that. I think they're going to be running a lot of inside stunts with those inside linebackers. So I don't think we know exactly how that's going to work. And I don't think we should overlook Rasheem Green. I think he's you know, at 6'5 and 280, he's got a lot of, you know, that Leonard Williams look about him. And, I mean, he's just got a long, you know, long-limbed, you know, and kind of a lean, you know, if you can be lean and 280 pounds and playing the, you know, the one gap and being encouraged to play on the other side of the line of scrimmage. I think last year we basically knew, you know, none of the line, you know, the down guys were going to be, you know, factors. I don't know that we know that this year. I think I might put Rasheem, you know, Green as a possible, you know, pass rusher that could do some damage. So, and I think I'm impressed with Jabari Ruffin. Looks like a new guy. He just looks, I mean, he, I don't know if you saw the hit in the spring game, but he just leveled, gosh, who was coming across the other way? Steven Mitchell, I think. And Jabari's been flying around. He looks healthy. He just looks like he's confident. And we always thought he had the physical tools, you know, to get it done. And if he gets put into the right situation, I think he could be a factor as well.
Well, it's a good segue to the next question about, if you're talking about pass rushers, we got one from Twitter, Tyler Nelson, at BlueTJN wrote in. He said, do you see Olawale, he's talking about Bedekue, get better as spring practice went on? Did you see him get better as spring practice went on? And if so, how so?
Well, I will say this. He worked at it hard. I mean, he stayed, there were days, honestly, he stayed an hour after practice sometimes. Now, he's working by himself, and a lot of that is, you know, physical conditioning. And, you know, here's a guy that you look at and you think, I'm not sure you need a lot more physical conditioning. It's just, you know, becoming a football player and you know, playing in space and knowing when not to overcommit and things like that. But we probably shouldn't leave him off the list because he's one of those guys you may be able to line up just a little bit wider and just say, you know, see where that quarterback's going to be, get there, and just run by everybody. Now, he may run by the quarterback too, but his physical tools are really, really impressive. If a guy's only been playing, football a couple of years, whether you can expect him to be able to play at the level USC is going to be playing at, especially, you know, two of those first three games, that may be asking a lot because if he's, I mean, but as a change of pace, if you start him and teams are able to, you know, game plan and look at him and say, okay, this is what we can do. But if you bring him in, you know, on occasion and, you know, slip him in there and just turn him loose, I think he could be a factor. He's really impressive.
You know, he's one of those guys. It's funny. You mentioned Rasheem Green. And for the previous recruiting class, I thought he was the most important player because, like, athletic defensive linemen do not grow on trees in California, kind of like they do in the SEC country. So missing out on a guy, a five-star local guy like that, at that kind of position, I thought would have been big. And then from
right.
the same high
Absolutely.
School, you know, getting Wale, and he just looks like this chiseled, just a Greek god kind of thing. And there's certainly a rawness to him of only playing football for a couple of years and coming from Nigeria. But man, he's another one of those five stars that you never want to miss on a five star. But he has that potential. We talked about having playmakers and Sua Cravens being that guy. I think he has the potential to be one of those dudes that just makes a whole bunch of individual plays, goes off on his own, off script maybe sometimes. And just brings the quarterback down or makes a big tackle for a loss. He just seems like he could be that kind of guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's the kind of guy that once he gets a sense of this is how the game's played, you can line him up and they know he's coming and they still can't get there. You know, you can be that offensive tackle and you can say, I know what he's going to do. I know how he's going to do it. And you just can't get there fast enough to get in front of him. I mean, I do think he's got that kind of disruptive ability. I mean, he's just going to line up and come, and, you know, as long as he doesn't take himself out of plays, he'll be a factor. You have to compensate for him in the game, because you don't want him running by and somebody, you know, taking advantage and taking it back up inside where, you know, where USC doesn't have anybody. But, I would think there are some things they're going to be able to do with him that that will be very difficult for teams to handle. He's just one of those guys that he can get there before you can get to him.
Yeah, it's funny. Watching him in practice, I wouldn't say his hands are all that great. You could tell just he hasn't really played football all that long. It just didn't seem all that natural. If he had to, you know, playing soccer or something, maybe what, but trying to catch the ball and some of the linebacker drills was kind of funny to watch. I feel bad, but he just that wasn't really where his strengths were lying in the ball skills yet.
Yeah, that's why you got to say, what the heck is a sport? And I know people get mad at me for this, but a sport where they tell you you can't use your hands, to me, is like, what? You can't use your hands? But it was obvious, you know, kids grow up in places where they don't catch or, you know, or throw a ball. And to me, you ought to always be able to do that, but it doesn't look like he's done a lot of that.
Certainly not. All right, so we're just to let people know, this is the Peristyle Podcast, but we're doing it a live version on Friday Harbor Tiny Radio. So it's fhtinyradio.com is where we're broadcasting it live. And we're going to do a couple minutes. We're going to hand it over to the Husky Fan Podcast. But so we have a hard out in a couple minutes, Dan. But I just wanted to kind of get your thoughts on where USC stands right now, after spring football, heading into the summer. Do you kind of think, you know, this was Clay Helton's first go around, you know, running spring practice? You think it went well for him? And did he do the right things?
Yeah, I think, you know, the thing he did so well, I think, was put together a coaching staff that gets together well and has a good idea of what it wants to do, you know, on both sides of the ball. We'll see a little more with special teams and John Baxter, who's kind of, a one-of-a-kind, you know, sort of a guy, and we really didn't get to see much of the punting, and we saw different ways of trying to, you know, get, kicker Mac Bormeister, who's got the big, powerful leg, but trying to get him, you know, squared away accuracy-wise. Offensive, I love the offensive concept that that they really believe they're going to have to be able to run the ball and run it in tough, you know, situations. And yet they're going to throw it to a lot of people and throw it quickly and take what you give them. And I think the difference is, I know – you know, Sark talked about that, but I don't think there was the follow through in terms of designing the run game and preparing the offensive line to do what had to be done, you know, to make the run game work. I think the thought that they're going to be able to run the ball will allow them to throw the play action pass. The thought that they've got tight ends who can all get deep and go down the seam, and you're going to have to defend them most every play, is really a big deal. That changes the way things are. I mean, if you remember all of Pete Carroll's good teams, heck, most of the time the first play of the game was, a naked boot, you know, throw to the tight end. And why did it work? Because you had to respect the run game. And so I think, you know, the concepts and the coaching on offense are really good. I think, and I think the kids really picked up on them. There really wasn't a lot of, lost time to transition. On defense, I think Clancy, you got to believe after what he did in 2013 that, he will understand the personnel. Some of them were here then, and how they fit into his system. And the idea of encouraging USC kids to be aggressive on defense, to play the one gap, to play on the other side of the ball, to run to the football, to play a lot more man-to-man, again, that fits the kind of character of what USC football should be and the way USC recruits. And it was really difficult for the last however many years when they kind of felt like, you know, Lane and Sark felt like they had to go away because of numbers or who knows what exactly, but they went away from those concepts that they couldn't teach defense well enough, that they were just playing safe and all that. And so I really like where they are, you know, scheme-wise and coaching-wise. And for the first time in a long time, it looks like there's enough depth. And really decent experience. So I think there's a good reason, you know, to feel, you know, fairly comfortable about, or confident, I guess, and comfortably confident about where this team is, that they've got a chance to be pretty good. And now they have to just take it and do it. But you're not looking at a team that structurally is in a terrible place, except for something's got to happen with the defensive line, where guys have got to come through who are young. They're athletic enough, they're big enough, they're strong enough, fast enough, but they're pretty young. And other than that, this team's got a chance to be pretty good.
All right, well, that's going to wrap us up for our show here, the Peristyle Podcast. That's Dan Weber. I'm Ryan Abraham. Thanks to Tiny Radio for doing this live version of the podcast today. We're going to hand it over to the Husky Fan Podcast. Thanks for tuning in.